Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Galton and Jimmy Kemsky.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is BGN Radio episode number 293, I think. I am Jimmy Kemsky from PhillyVoice.com. With me, as always, is Brandon Lee Galton of BleedingGreenNation.com. We are coming to you on a glorious, sunny, but cold Monday morning here in the Philadelphia area after the Philadelphia Eagles eviscerated the Tennessee Titans a day ago. Brandon, how are you doing, buddy? And also, where can I find the finest meat snacks in the land?
Ho, 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 Jimmy. The holiday season is upon us.
Oh, is there big news coming here with the meat snacks?
And there's big news when it comes to Righteous Felon Craft Turkey, which you can get by going to righteousfelon.com and using discount code BGN20. That's right, BGN20. I mean, Jimmy, can you imagine a better stocking stuffer than Righteous Felon Craft Turkey?
What does 20 on the end of that BGN20 mean, Brandon?
Well, Jimmy, that means 20% off your order. So usually, you know, it's BGN15, but right now, it's BGN20 for 20% off. That's right. Righteous Felon Craft Turkey is in the holiday spirit. They contacted me and they were like, you know what? We need to do right by the BGN Radio listeners and give them a little bit of an extra discount. It's a great gift, honestly, to get. Again, it's like a perfect stocking stuffer idea. So do it. Go to righteousfelon.com and use discount code BGN20 for 20% off your order. You're going to want to do that, because it's going to drop back down to 15 at some point. So do it now and get it. If you have never tried it, now is the time. But Jimmy, the Eagles have been loading up on the Righteous Felon Craft Turkey, as evidenced by a statement win. How many people, including us, were talking about, oh, this Titans team is tough. Mm-hmm. They had the best record in the NFL. I set it up last week since 2018 when Vrabel was hired as underdog straight up. They're a tough team. They, regardless of pretty much who they play against, they muck it up against those teams. They took the Chiefs to overtime despite only completing five passes in a game with a rookie quarterback. They beat the Packers pretty, you know, convincingly on a Thursday night game. Packers aren't great, but still. They lost to Joe Burrow, right? Yeah. But like that game was pretty close. Mm-hmm. Tough team. They're the bullies, they're physical. Didn't matter. Eagles just dominated.
The Eagles outbullied the bullies on Sunday, quite frankly, on both sides of the ball, offensively, defensively, along the lines. Particularly their defensive line was awesome. But I think we got to start with the offense in this episode. And the guy of the game, A.J. Brown, of course.
The guy of the game. I like that award.
Who the Titans incomprehensibly traded to the Eagles for not that big of a cost, a first-round pick and some change. The pick that they got from the Eagles, they wound up taking Treylon Burks, who actually made a phenomenal catch in this game, got knocked out on the play, of course. But A.J. Brown, guy of the game, official guy of the game for BGN Radio episode number 293. He had a big boy catch, as Jalen Hurts described it, grown man catch. That was a second touchdown catch of the game where it was a deep ball down the left side where, you know, we saw this all throughout training camp where he shows, quote unquote, late hands, doesn't off the defensive back that the ball is arriving. And just at the last second, bang, catches the ball. It's a very subtle thing about his game. We can look at him and see his speed and his size and his explosiveness and tackle breaking ability and all that stuff. But there are a lot of subtle things about his game that makes him the player that he is. Of course, he had the first touchdown of the game wiped off the board because his toe barely landed out of bounds. Next play, they go right back to him. He just runs over a cornerback out in his way. He just ran him over and was just wide open down the field, makes a touchdown catch on that play. But on the day, 8 catches, 10 targets for 119 yards, 2 touchdowns. And just, he downplayed his, looking forward to this game all throughout the week. And then even after the game, he sort of downplayed that it meant more to him than other games. But clearly it did. And he came through in a big way. You know, had a foot injury, had an illness, was kind of like not as productive the last, 4 games, I guess, than he was throughout the first, 8 or 9 games or whatever it was to start the season. But he re-broke out in a big way week 13 against his former team. And you know what? Good for him.
Not a coincidence to me that the Eagles had their last complete game against the Steelers when AJ Brown went off and they had another one in this spot. Like, maybe this sounds obvious, but I think his yards and his touchdowns and everything, they're not coming. He's not a stat patter. Those aren't like, empty or garbage time yards or whatever. Like, this is a guy who makes big, meaningful impact. And we saw that against his former team. He did admit after the game that he had this circled on his calendar. Of course he did. I mean, that was obvious from social media. He, as recently as that aforementioned Chiefs game, he was clowning on the Titans for the fact that they didn't even have any receivers in that game. I think log a catch or whatever. Come on. And also, insane decision by the Titans to trade this guy. Like, insane. Like, what? Why? Why did they really do it? So they could save money, and to do what? What are they doing with that money? Like, so they could have money to pay good players. AJ Brown's an amazing player, and I don't care. Even if Treylon Burks turns out to be quote unquote good, this isn't the Titans podcast, but I just think it's so insane that they traded him. He's not AJ Brown. He just isn't, because many good players are not AJ Brown. He is phenomenal, and kudos to Howie Roseman for being able to do this. And I guess kudos to him for missing out on the likes of Robert Woods, who the Titans ended up getting, funny enough, and Allen Robinson and all the other guys they were connected to there for a little bit, and Calvin Ridley and everything, because AJ Brown was certainly the best of anyone that was available, and they got him, and they paid. It was a bargain. What they gave up for AJ Brown was a flat out bargain.
Yeah, it was the one, of course. But what was the
18
other
overall?
But they gave up something else too.
No, they didn't, right? I thought it was just the straight up.
It was
up
a straight up. I thought there was another pick involved.
I thought it was just 18 overall, a simple swap. But that's crazy. That's a no brainer. And you give up the $100 million contract, but going rate for an elite receiver, so worth it. And you've seen the impact it's had on this offense, which, quite frankly, is unstoppable. I mean, that late hands touchdown catch. What do you do? How do you defend that? You can't do anything. You can play textbook defense, have perfect coverage, and it doesn't matter. Guess what? You can't stop it. And that kind of is the theme of this Eagles offense as a whole. I mean, last week, and I want to give the coaching staff, there's a lot of credit to go around. I mean, Jalen Hurts was obviously awesome, had a career day moving the ball through the air. Kind of funny that I don't think we were saying this, but I don't think everyone was saying this. I don't want to strawman this here, but there was some discourse out there they need to pass more to really win and be sustainable. They can't just run like they did against the Packers. And I agree with that from a macro perspective. But are we forgetting that Jalen Hurts had some really good passing performances earlier this year and throughout year? It's not like he hasn't shown that ability. And certainly he showed it again in a huge way in this game. A week after, so last week, they kept it simple. It was so I really thought this is really nice to see the past two games, the Packers game and the Titans game, coming off of the Colts game, where I thought the coaching staff, Nick Sirianni and Shane Steichen specifically, had an uncharacteristically bad performance. There's so much 13 personnel early in that game. I thought they really overthought things. The past 2 weeks, not the case. Packers, bad run defense, run the ball. Titans, not as good at stopping the pass the ball. Boom. That simple. Take advantage of it. You don't have to overthink it. Don't have to overcomplicate it. You have really talented players. Play to their strengths.
Football doesn't have to be that complicated. It just doesn't. On your Titans receivers point, Burks had the AJ Brown for the first round pick, 18th overall, and the 101st overall pick,
okay,
which was at the tail end of the third round. Burks had the 25-yard touchdown reception. Great catch. Absorbed a huge hit by Marcus Epps. Helmet-to-helmet hit. I think that was accidental, really. He got knocked out. You know what the Titans receivers did otherwise? Other than that catch?
Was it like 38 yards? Or, oh, other than that? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, like
8 targets, 3 catches, 16 yards. So, not a very good game for the Titans wide receivers, who, again, used to include A.J. Brown, no longer include A.J. Brown because he plays for the Philadelphia Eagles now. And the Philadelphia Eagles fans get to enjoy him, and the Tennessee Titans fans no longer get to enjoy him. But yeah, on your point about last week and this week with the, you know, the insane rushing yardage that they put up, 360-some-odd yards, and then 380 yards through the air. The Eagles can just beat you in so many different ways, and two things on that. One, Jalen Hurts is the engine that drives that because he's so dangerous with his legs, as he always was. I mean, he was already, you know, either 1A or 1B in terms of the best running quarterbacks in the NFL, along with Lamar Jackson. And just the steps that he's taken from last year to this year as a passer, he's one of the better passers in the league now.
I think from training camp to now, too. I think he's gotten better like this.
True.
Yeah.
So I just did, you can read this on phillyvoice.com, our my friends and listeners, but I just did a stock up, stock down of Jalen Hurts' performances this season. I have it 9 stock up,
yeah,
3 stock neutral, 0 stock down. He has not had a bad game so far this year. You cannot say that about any other quarterback in the league, I don't think. Like, Mahomes has a bad game in there. Josh Allen certainly does. Tua had one yesterday. So, I mean, like, I don't know how many other quarterbacks can say they haven't yet had a bad game. So he can beat you, again, as a runner, as a passer. You take one of those two things away, he'll beat you the other way. And then also the offensive line, man. Like, we already know they're an elite rushing offensive line, run game offensive line. But they can also pass protect, too. Like, Hurts got sacked twice in this game yesterday. It was clear that they were just going to drop back all day and try to pick apart the Titans secondary, which they did, of course. But they sacked him 2 times for 5 yards. I thought the offensive line did a great job in pass protection yesterday and throughout the season. It's just an elite group. So you got this offensive line that can pass protect and run block, and you got this quarterback who can make plays with his legs and open up, you know, more opportunities for the running backs like Miles Sanders. And he has become, like I said, just a really, really good passer. Arguably top 5 in the NFL as a passer this year. Certainly top 10. They're dangerous, man. And we've talked about them being Super Bowl contenders all season long, which clearly they are. But they looked beyond that on Sunday. I thought they looked like a special team on Sunday. Now, they haven't always been consistent from week to week, looking that good anyway. But man, yesterday, that was the best performance of the season so far, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I mean, some of that stuff is just natural over the course of a season. You're not going to blow out teams every single week.
Yep.
It just doesn't happen. And they had a lull. I think, again, that's really not that uncommon for any great team, I think. And some of the things we saw in there, I don't think were characteristic of the team in terms of, you know, the turnovers in the Washington game and the Commanders being able to play that style of football, which probably isn't going to work, you know, over, you know, a bigger sample size. It worked in that game. And clearly it just wasn't the Eagles' night that night. Like, it wasn't good. Things were not going their way on the whole. And then again, the uncharacteristic coaching performance against the Colts, I just thought that was so bad, like in a really weird way. And then again, you can factor in maybe the Frank Reich revenge game weirdness of it all for Sirianni. 2 points on things you said. 1, offensive line. That was one of the things you can nitpick in this game in terms of the pre-snap penalties.
Yeah,
and then the defense, too. Josh Sweat had that offside penalty, which extended the Titans' sole touchdown drive. Mm-hmm. And that was so weird. It was just like, I'm not really worried about that, obviously, as a thing that's going to continue. But it was just strange to me. Like, you're at home. Why are you having all these false starts? Like, figure it out.
Yeah.
The refs certainly weren't reluctant to throw flags, but I mean, false starts, you know, is less of a gray area with those. So that's frustrating. That's something, you know, they'll be able to clean up or work on, certainly going into this week's game. on Jalen Hurts, I think it comes down to, and wow, what a big, a lot of growth I've done when it comes to the way I feel about him. It's kind of where it was with Nick Foles at a certain point where I just trust him. I trust him out there. He's, everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not going to make dumb mistakes like we've seen some Eagles quarterbacks do in the past. He's not going to be erratic. He's going to make the plays that he needs to make. He keeps doing this weird thing. And I've heard, you know, our good friend Bo Wolf note this too. And I feel like I keep seeing this where I have like these underthrows early in the games. He kind of did that in the Steelers game.
He short hopped one to, was it Devontae by the sideline?
Yeah. It was,
or was it AJ Brown?
It was Devontae. Should have been an easy first down along the left sideline. I also thought, you know, the touchdown throw to Devontae, by the way, Devontae Smith also very good.
Yeah.
I thought that throw was like underthrown too. Didn't matter because he caught it for the touchdown. But anyway, I think going back to Hurts, like, and what you're saying about like the belief in this team as a whole, it does go back to him. And it's just like the Eagles are in good hands with him. This is like Allstate here, not a sponsor necessarily. I don't know. Maybe they are. But I just feel like I trust him. Like, he's going to do the right thing and he's going to make big plays in addition to, he's not a game manager. He's not just going to execute the offense. He's going to do that, but he's also going to make big plays. I thought some of the things we saw from him as a passer were like new and improved in terms of those throws up to the seam to Jack Stoll. That's not something he was doing. Like,
right.
And because you talked about this too, I think on Twitter in your article where, you know, Jalen Hurts last year and in the past, typically throwing a lot of passes to that right side of the field, not really utilizing the left, and literally fewer pass attempts over the middle of the field than any other quarterback last year. Now that's the whole field's in play. And those passes up the seam to Jack Stoll, I thought were really nice. And they were like in tight windows too. Those weren't just like always wide open throws.
Right.
And also those dump downs to Kenny Gainwell, I thought that was huge because that's not something I think we've seen out of him. I feel like the typical Jalen Hurts check down that I've seen in the past is one to the flat that goes for like 2 yards. And it's kind of frustrating because it doesn't really, you know, accomplish a whole lot. Whereas these ones, he was kind of getting to them earlier in his progression too, where like he looked downfield, didn't see anything. Okay, boom, quick, out to Kenny Gainwell. He just scoots for 5-7 yards, whatever it is. And Kenny Gainwell, I thought, looked more effective than ever in that way. And I think that's a hard thing for Hurts to do sometimes because of the lack of his height. And on some of those throws, I think you even saw him kind of like fake pump fake a little bit to make sure he got the line, maybe jumping up in the air and trying to bat it down and then throwing right after that so they couldn't knock it down. But like, those are new things for him, at least to me.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I said earlier, like, I think he's gotten even better as the season has gone along. So I couldn't be more impressed with Jalen Hurts. He, right now, especially with Mahomes losing, I mean, like, he has to be the MVP.
On your trust point, he just doesn't make mistakes, too. Like, he's got 3 interceptions this season, and 2 of them. So one of the interceptions was the deep ball against the Commanders that actually landed in A.J. Brown's hands. It went through the defender's hands first and then landed in A.J. Brown's hands, and then the defender wrestled it away. But there's nothing wrong with that throw whatsoever at that point in the game. Take a shot down the field to try to help jumpstart your offense, turned into an interception, but certainly not his fault. And then against, I forget who it was, the Vikings, I believe.
Yeah.
The little dump down to Gainwell that bounced off his hands and into the hands of a Vikings defender. Certainly wasn't his fault. The only interception that was definitively his fault was against the Jaguars in that super rainy, windy game.
Yeah.
I think it was Andre Sisco that got him. And that was a pick six, if I recall, right?
It was a target to Pascal, too. It was like, maybe don't force a throw in the rain to Zach Pascal on the run as you're rolling left. So, yeah, just an uncharacteristically odd decision.
But that's it. It's the one. It's the one interception that is definitively his fault this season. And then the fumbles, you know, we lived through a few years of Carson Wentz just giving the ball away on fumbles and just like horrendous pocket presence, trying to do too much on plays and giving the ball away. He had 2 fumbles, I think, against the Houston Texans, but otherwise it has not been an issue for him.
I think he had a drop pick in the Cardinals game, or like a pick that was reviewed and overturned. Like, it was close. It should have been a pick. It should have been. There hasn't been a lot of that, unlike Dak Prescott, if you watch the Cowboys game this year. But anyway, sorry.
Dak has had a lot of interception luck this season. But yeah, just the one interception that's definitively his fault, and then not that many others where a ball should have been picked off but just wasn't. Mm-hmm. So you're right. Like, he's very trustworthy, But also, he's making plays down the, like, deep down the field. He's taking his share of shots. So it's not like he's, you know, like Sam Bradford, check down king, like, all game. You look at that spray chart of Hurts, you mentioned, you know, he a legitimate concern heading into the season, or really more so about his 2021 season, was that he heavily favored the right side of the field. And it's all he's stretching the field horizontally and vertically this season. You look at his spray chart, it's just all over the field from this Titans game. And yeah, I mean, the Eagles have themselves clearly a franchise quarterback, and I'm very clearly the best quarterback in the division. I think also very clearly the best quarterback in the NFC. They are clear favorites to get to the Super Bowl at this point.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing here. If you're talking about the Eagles as a Super Bowl contender, no, you're wrong. They're a Super Bowl favorite. It doesn't mean they definitely will get there, but I'm saying, like, they've earned the status of this team is, I mean, obviously they're probably literally favored, but in terms of, like, earning that, not just being the default, but, like, they've earned that kind of status, especially too, when we should mention that the 49ers just lost Jimmy G for the year. And I don't think they're going to fall off the map entirely because it's still a tough defense. They still have some playmakers, but talking about the last pick in the draft,
the Brock literal Purdy. Last pick of the draft, Brock Purdy is their new starting quarterback.
You know, and you know, we've always talked about, especially you, the value of playoff experience, and certainly that's something Jimmy G has, and this guy doesn't. So that's, you know, probably not going to serve them well. You like your chances more so now if the 49ers come to Philly, let's say, for the NFC championship game with Brock Purdy instead of Jimmy G. Not to say, again, they're going to be a cakewalk, because I still think they have a lot of things going for them. But if just, you know, we're looking at it here, it really feels like Eagles and Cowboys. Like, those are the two teams really. And the Vikings, I know, are there, but, man, I'm still not buying them. They're like 9-0, I think, in one score games this year. Like, that's not sustainable. That doesn't hold up over big trends. Like, that, it's not just knowing how to win. Like, they're getting very fortunate. They've not had a game decided by more than one score since week one, and that was against the Packers. So I'm not buying them.
They had a sneaky, sneaky damaging injury in their Sunday night win. I mean, they blew out the Colts.
For the Cowboys,
in that Sunday
you're talking
night
about?
Win. The Cowboys, yeah. Anthony Brown, they lost to. I think it was starting a torn Achilles.
Yep.
He's not that great of a player, but he's a starter opposite Trayvon Diggs, and that is one of their thinnest positional groups. So they're going to need somebody to step up there. And Trayvon Diggs, for as good of a playmaker as he is, we saw in that Sunday night game, he gave up a very easy touchdown because he jumped a route that didn't, the ball didn't go that way. He jumped a route and he left his receiver wide open for a touchdown. So there's some good and bad with Trayvon Diggs, but then Diggs aside, they just don't have much at that cornerback position. And when you look at, you know, how the Eagles can find a flaw in a defense and they can exploit it. And the Cowboys have two. They're questionable run defense. And now, I mean, they're going to have trouble covering offenses that have multiple weapons in their passing game. And the Eagles certainly have that in A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Dallas Goedert. So when Dallas Goedert returns, of course, they have playmakers. Like Trayvon Diggs can turn a game on its head, as can Micah Parsons. And they have other good pass rushers like DeMarcus Lawrence and Armstrong is having a breakout season as well. So they can make plays on defense, but they also have significant weaknesses that I think the Eagles can exploit.
Yeah, also missing Jordan Lewis at cornerback, their slot guy. So just, you know, not great for them in that regard, but get into some more Cowboys talk on the NFC East mixtape with RJ Ochoa.
That's right.
Sorry, subscribe, rate, review. We'll be talking about that plenty on, well, we'll be recording on Tuesday, but the episode drops on Wednesday mornings. Not only on the podcast feed, but also check out the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel, which is where the BGN Radio post-game show airs. So make sure you're subscribed to that and checking that out. If you aren't already, let's wrap up with the offense here, Jimmy. Wanted to mention that Quez Watkins left this game with an injury. Jeff McClain had noted that Quez said he'll be okay, but there was a report out from Jeremy Fowler about Quez suffering, was it an AC joint sprain?
AC joint sprain. And a little more background on that. There are three different grades of AC joint sprains, 1, 2, and 3. Odell Beckham had a grade 3 AC joint sprain in 2021. Grade 3 is the worst of the three. He didn't miss a game. So like, he got injured, I believe it was week 6 in 2021 when he was still with the Browns, played the next week. So it'll probably not cost Quez Watkins much time on the field. We'll see if he can return next week or not. But it is an injury that can be annoying for a player. It'll hurt him during the game, and it'll potentially affect the way that he runs. So we'll see how that affects him on the field. He's had a he's been an impact player these last four games for the Eagles. Maybe not so much in this past game against the Titans. I think he had 5 catches for 20-something yards, 30-something yards, 30-something yards, I believe.
Yeah, 5 for 37, 7.4 on 6
targets. But over the last four games, I think he has 14 catches on 17 targets, so he's been efficient for a little bit under 200 yards, and he has the 2 touchdowns, of course. So, yeah, they'll need him to play, but Dallas Goedert is on his way back soon. He'll miss one more game at least this week when the Eagles are in New Jersey to play the Giants, but he'll be eligible to return thereafter. And he seemed to indicate in the locker room this week that he, he thinks he'll be good to go. By the way, also on the injury front, Avante Maddox is eligible to come off of injured reserve this week. A little murkier on whether he'll be elevated or not. But I think they can survive another week without him and against the Giants team that has basically all their receivers, like their top 4 receivers have been wiped out this year. And, it's not like Daniel Jones can hurt you with his legs, but isn't, you know, quite the threat with his arm that many other quarterbacks in the NFL are. So if there's any concerns about Avante Maddox retweaking, it's a hamstring injury, right? Mm-hmm. So it's those can linger. So I think the Eagles should play it safe to be determined, you know, what they actually do with him this week.
I agree with that. I would just add with Quez, a little disappointing to me. He didn't catch either of those targets he had down the field. The first one, I thought Hurts was pressured, so he had to throw it a little bit earlier than ideally he would have. But still, it was a play that hit his hands and was catchable. And then the second one, too, where he kind of just was able to track it in the air somewhat, but not fully, and actually complete the catch down the field. That was negated by offsetting penalties on that play. But still, like, I want to see him make one of those two catches, like, for the process standpoint of it all, like, for the confidence level of it all. And, like, not that I think Jalen Hurts is going to lose confidence in him or the coaching staff necessarily, but, like, hey, man, Goddard's out. Like, this is your time to take advantage of these opportunities, and you kind of have to keep making those plays, even if it's going to get negated, to kind of continue to have the ball go your way and justify that. So it was a little disappointing to me. Like, say it was an awful game for him, but I think he could have, you know, I wanted to see a little bit more from him. So that was disappointing. I put him in the I don't know section of my winners, losers, and I don't know column. So it's like, you know, I can't do the winners, but a little harsh to do the losers. So that's all I had on the offense. Are you ready to take a break, Jimmy?
Yeah. One other thing I'll just mention real quick is they got to pull their starters early, which is always nice. A little reward for the starters.
9:40 left in the fourth quarter. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And even before that, because there was a defensive possession before that, right? So they basically didn't have to play for any of the, I mean, almost none of the fourth quarter. Second time they've done that this year, the Steelers was the other game that was a blowout that they got to rest starters. Offensively and defensively, they rested starters for the most part, whereas they didn't pull the defensive starters against the Steelers, at least initially. So, yeah, more on that, actually, when we get to the defense. But before we do, Brandon.
If you're looking to buy, sell, or rent a house, who do you want to contact, Jimmy?
Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors was voted by God as the greatest realtor in the history of the universe. And you can reach her at 856-906-9295. Again, 856-906-9295. She's a super lady and a super real estate agent. Brandon?
I want to see, like, an actual award or whatever on her website that is like, or like, you know, those testimonials that they have from like people.
A quote and then like God.
It's like, Kristen did a great job helping me with my house search. Kevin R. And then like, you know, like just like a couple names, and then just like, Kristen Roach is the best realtor in the universe.
She actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because she actually does have a number of reviews and 5 stars across the board. Whether it be Google or Zillow or Realtor.com, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, it's legit. Like, she has Her clients appreciate her expertise and her availability.
Back after this.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Back here on BGN Radio. Jimmy, it's time to talk about the Eagles' defense. Is it time to fire Jonathan Gannon?
Defense is awesome, dude. I think the obvious standout performances came via the pass rush because they did sack Ryan Tannehill six times. The aforementioned Josh Sweat had the bad offsides penalty, but he also got to the quarterback three times, got a credit for two sacks. And then Hargrave, Cox, BG, and Reddick each had one. So, yeah, they got after the passer. But you can't get after the passer until you do the dirty work first. And they certainly did that against the Titans' run game, more specifically Derrick Henry, the great Derrick Henry, who only got to carry the ball 11 times because the Eagles got a big lead and because it was ineffective. Carried 11 times. Just 30 yards, 2.7 yards per carry, and a long rush of just 6 yards. The Titans offense that the Treylon Burks touchdown aside, they just got nothing going all game long. Total domination, in my opinion, by the Eagles defense. And good on Jonathan Gannon for sort of taking the Jim Schwartz approach to this game. Of course, the Jim Schwartz approach to this game is, first and foremost, shut down the run. Mm-hmm. Make the opposing offense one-dimensional, and then get after the passer. And I thought the Eagles were very successful in adopting that approach from the man that they faced, Jim yep. Schwartz, and the Tennessee Titans on Sunday. So, yeah, 5 stars across the board from me on this Eagles defense.
A gold star, if you will. Maybe mm-hmm. 5 gold stars, as Jim Schwartz would like to say. Yeah, I mean, the Eagles held the Titans to their second lowest point total and second lowest yardage total this season. The only time they were worse was when they got blown out by the Bills. Okay. Yep, all the way back in week 2. It's a long time ago. They certainly had, you know, have had turned it around since their bye, I believe. But, you know, Eagles run defense, what, 87 yards on 21 carries total? And some of those were in, like, garbage time at the end.
Some of those were Ryan Tannehill scrambles, too.
Yes, and Malik Willis actual running pass around. Plays. Yeah. Tannehill had 34 yards on 3 scrambles. Eagles have 42 sacks, which is second most in the NFL. It's tied for the team's most through 12 games since 1991. One of the best defenses, not only in franchise history, but, like, mm-hmm. NFL history. So just, man, really impressive. And not only were they getting sacks, but they were, like, violent hits on Ryan, like, yes. legally, to be clear. Yeah. But there's, like, violent hits on Tannehill, just, like, kind of, like, destroying him and demoralizing him, honestly. Like, that's not fun. If you're a quarterback and you're having to face that, like, you're like, this sucks. Like, this is awful. I thought the defense did a great job. And I think maybe, what's that? Oh, Charlie, sorry.
That Charlie yeah. loves talking pass rush. He's excited
I think
right now.
One of the most impressive things was that they didn't have a takeaway. I thought that's a good thing. Like, obviously, sure. you know, over the course of the season and more games, mm-hmm. you want to force I'm not saying takeaways are bad, but I'm saying I think there was some, like, is the Eagles defense living and dying by the takeaway? Because I don't think that's necessarily a good place to be. At some point, you have to force punts. You have to get stops. And the Eagles did that. They got the Titans with, I have to give credit for a team that's been very bad at tackling this year. I thought the Eagles were making great tackles across the board, like the cornerbacks, Marcus Epps had a tackle, like the linebacker, everyone, defensive line, everyone's making good tackles. And like you said, as Jim Schwartz would say, they earned the right to rush the passer by forcing the Titans into third and long situations. Unlike, you know, kind of like the Washington game where they consistently allowed Washington to get into third and shorts, third and manageable situations. And they took advantage. So, yeah, could not be more impressed. And again, glad there was no takeaway from the standpoint of, like, it wasn't just about that. It wasn't counting on something that they couldn't control. Like, they controlled it, and they just dominated. It wasn't just about Gannon's theory of, like, making the other team try to mess up and hoping they're going to mess up at some point. So, yeah, I like to see that. That was good.
We have breaking news in the NFL, actually. I mean, this doesn't really matter, but but it's newsworthy. The Panthers have waived
this is old
quarterback Baker Mayfield.
This happened before we started recording.
Oh, did it? I didn't even know that. Okay.
Yeah, you missed it.
So anyway, the Titans had – you mentioned the lack of turnovers. I know that – I'm just looking this up right now as I'm talking. But the – Britton Covey, I know, had six – punt returns. I'm trying to find how many times they actually punted.
We'll get to the special teams.
They punted seven times. So the Titans punted seven times. So yeah, I mean, that just goes to your point that they didn't force turnovers, but they did force, I don't know how many three and outs they had, but yeah, the Titans just got nothing going all day. And you know, I don't know that they were necessarily relying on turnovers as a crutch because they've had comfortable wins all season long. Like if they didn't lead the league in takeaways, I think they'd still have a really good record anyway. But I'm with you that it is nice to see them not get turnovers and still kind of just dominate this way that this game the way that they did.
I agree. I mean, defensive line across the board deserves credit. You know, how many guys got pressure? I mean, Brandon Graham had a sack. Hassan Reddick had two half sacks. Josh Sweat was, you know, led the team in sacks. He was impactful, really just feasted on the Titans backup left tackle there. Not the first time Josh Sweat has absolutely just like dominated a backup tackle.
On the snap counts, Javon Hargrave played the most snaps with, it was either 28 or 29, but an extremely low number for like the highest defensive lineman. They have so many bodies on their defensive line. It's crazy because you have six defensive tackles who are going to be active every week. And you can just keep rotating those guys in and out, keep their snaps down. That's going to be a big advantage in January when the playoffs roll around because those guys are going to be fresh and rested. Other teams that don't have that kind of depth are not. And then even like on the edge, Josh Sweat didn't play a ton. Like I said, like the highest number of snaps was 29. Josh Sweat, BG, Hassan Reddick, they all kept their snaps down. It's a huge advantage to have a fresh defensive line in January. And then, like, we saw some guys come in. Like, last week we saw Reed Blankenship come in, and he was up to the challenge of playing for a guy that came out for an injury. And I thought the same thing this week. I mean, the game was already out of hand at this point, but I thought the same thing this week when Kaiser White came out. Yeah. And N'Kobe Dean came in. N'Kobe Dean played pretty well. He had five tackles. Yeah. I think he only played 15 defensive snaps. And I know that some of
TFL.
At least one of his tackles was on special teams. I don't know how many of his five tackles were in the regular defense, but he had, I think, at least three within the regular defense. And like you said, he had a tackle for loss. Like the first play of the game that he was in, he not only got a tackle, but he also was also held on the play.
Yeah.
So like he was around the ball, like he was flying all over the field and was in on a lot of plays in the short amount of time that he played. And just looking, not to, you know, stray too far away from this Eagles Titans matchup, but you look at like this offseason, they have a lot of free agents and their two starting linebackers are both going to be free agents, TJ Edwards and Kaiser White. They're probably not going to be able to keep both of them. So my feeling is they'll probably prioritize Edwards over Kaiser. So if Kaiser does leave in free agency, maybe this is some encouraging signs that N'Kobe can step in and be your starter alongside TJ Edwards in 2023 and beyond.
Agree. And also maybe it's a sign that, hey, you need to get him like some rotational snaps in here. Maybe find ways to get him on the field from time to time, especially if the defense needs that boost. Maybe, you know, if everything's going great, maybe not. Don't force it. But if there are opportunities, you know, figure them out. going back to the defensive line of it all, Fletcher Cox also having his best stretch. He had like a 7-game stretch where he didn't have a sack dating back to week 3. Past couple games, he has won in each of them. And I don't think that's an accident. Going back to what I talked about on the podcast last week, where in the games where he's played, you know, fewer snaps, they keep, the magic number for him has been like 66%. You keep him under 66% of the snaps, and he's been productive this year. And I don't think that's an accident. So, yeah, it's not only good for the long term in terms of keeping guys fresh for the playoffs, it's also more effective now. Like, just the what players are able to contribute, I think, in smaller doses where they can go harder. And the most impressive thing of all, they did it without Robert Quinn.
Yeah, poor Robert Quinn. He got his bye week, finally.
He did deserve a week off.
You think that had anything to do with it? He didn't get his bye week earlier in the year?
I wonder.
He was a late addition to the injury report. He showed up on the injury report on Friday.
Yeah.
With a knee?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's been disappointing since they traded for him. 5 games, sure. I think. 2 tackles, 2 QB hits, if I recall. So he's been closer to Ryan Kerrigan than he has to Chris Long, for example, in terms of the old guy edge rusher acquisition. So my apologies for this background noise, by the way. People
What's
across
going on
the street
out there?
Are having trees and shrubs and bushes chopped up.
Out,
yeah.
It's jinx.
Like like in Fargo.
Oh no, geez, what a visual.
But
don't
not
let that up, kids.
But trees, not humans going into
jeez,
the
jeez, they had to say it too. Why would you put that visual? All right, anyway, I'm gonna take us away from that. I don't even know what we're talking about. How do we get on?
We were talking about Robert Quinn. Robert Quinn got the day off, basically.
Yeah, I think we'll see. And you know, we saw Hargrave kind of step up after the bye week. Like, his production, he said, like, getting
he's
that
8
one
sacks
week.
Now.
Yeah, I mean, he should probably be making his second straight Pro Bowl, right? I mean, he leads.
Yeah, I mean, he's close to a lock at this point, I think.
And also, probably should be re-signed because he's a free agent after this season. And, you know, I don't think it's time for Cox to go. You know, he's coming on here, but come on. It was time before this year. It's time now, especially if you can only keep one of those two guys, I think, given snap count and pass rush ability and all. But yeah, just, you know, overall, anything else left on the defense? I think you mentioned Blankenship. Thought he had another good game. Like, he looks good out there. I trust him. Like, it's one game, but like, it's not like, oh man, they instantly miss Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. It's like, no, like, Reed Blankenship's pretty good. It's not like he was tested in a major way with the Titans not having the most prolific passing attack, but still, good first game as a full starter for him. Anything else?
They'll survive with him the next few weeks, this week, because you had a run-heavy Titans team. You'll have a run-heavy Giants team this week. You'll have a run-heavy Bears team the following week. The game that you have to maybe be concerned about would be the Cowboys, of course, where they would certainly be better off with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson than Reed Blankenship. Like, let's be real. but he's played well in his opportunities here so far. Let's get to special teams
one last thing on Blankenship, and then, sorry, I wanted to mention Josiah Scott, too, because you mentioned the N'Kobe Dean factor when it comes to Kaiser White and TJ Edwards. Blankenship, like, Marcus Epps and CJGJ are both going to be free agents. So how does his play, and if he continues to play well, factor into that? Probably don't bring both back. I don't know if you were ever anyway. So that's something to watch. And last thing I'll say, one of the few losers from the Eagles side of things in my winners, losers and columns, winner, losers, I don't know column on bleedinggreennation.com was Josiah Scott. You know, gave up that touchdown to Treylon Burks. You know, tough play. Like, Burks goes up and gets it. It's a good throw. It's a good catch. But, you know, there is something to, like, him being a clear, like, weak point on the defense.
He's gotten
picked on.
I
don't want to crush him because, like, again, I think he's done reasonably well for what you can expect from, like, a backup slot corner who was brought in like he was as, like, you know, they traded a future day three pick for him. And I think if Josiah Scott has to start, like, a game or two for you, like, you can get by with that. But if you're just seeing that this isn't ideal, you know, over an extended course of time. So nothing, like, I don't want to, again, crush him, but it's just not ideal. It's a weak point of the defense.
Opposing offenses have been successful getting him matched up against their best receivers too, out of the slot. So
yeah, they're clearly attacking him.
That's probably something that is a little bit on Gannon as well for exposing him to that. But yeah, I agree. He's he's been a troublesome spot in relief of Maddux. So when Maddux gets back, whenever that is, they'll be fine there again. Yeah, actually, before we get to special teams, probably should point out some like they got contributions from a lot of, I mean, barely even role players. Like Jack Stoll is definitely a role player, a legit role player on this team. 3 catches for 41 yards.
Career game for him.
Mentioned N'Kobe Dean already. Kenny Gainwell, 3 catches for 38 yards, as you mentioned earlier. Grant Calcaterra had a 19-yard reception. Yeah. The you know, Stoll and Calcaterra combined, four catches on 4 targets for 60 yards. It's the best game that the reserve tight ends have had in relief.
You will sign up for that with Dallas Goedert out.
And then on special teams, you had 3 big hits. So the much maligned Eagles special teams made mistakes all season long. Had really bad coverage issues against the Packers. 3 big hits, one by Christian Ellis, one by N'Kobe Dean, and one by Andre Sacheré. Their coverage units were really good in this game. Britton Covey, as we mentioned earlier, had 6 punt returns, averaged 17 and a half yards per return. Covey looked like a good returner against the Titans. It was kind of like, hey, maybe this guy can actually do something. So special teams were, this was easily the special teams' best game of the season, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they were just not only not a liability. I forget how many negatives I've thrown in there. It wasn't like, okay, wow, they weren't a liability this week. Let's celebrate. No, they were like a strength. They were great.
Sure.
Kickoff coverage unit bounced back in a big way. You have to give credit. Speaking of role players, if I don't remember if you said this already, because my connection was kind of cutting in and out. But Christian Ellis, you know, they call him up from the practice squad, and he puts a big hit on the Titans punt returner. Also made some other good tackles on special teams. Covey, this is a crazy performance. I saw some sentiment out there like, see, you guys were too quick to give up on Britton Covey. Not like majorly, but I saw some of it out there and I'm like, not really. Like, I think people were reasonably frustrated with the lack of production they were getting there, considering he had 19 punt returns for 130 yards. That's a 6.8 average, and a long of 15 this whole season before this game, where he had 6 for 105. Like, he almost outproduced his season total in this one game. And it's not even like he had just one long return to do that. His long was 27. He had a 17.5 average. It's the second highest yardage of any punt returner this year, just behind Marcus Jones and the Patriots. It was really impressive. It wasn't just like, I thought, poor special teams coverage by the Titans. Like, he made some guys miss. He put some jukes on people and got to open field and made good decisions and looked good out there. I don't know if I still believe in him as like a big threat to take it to the house. I think he lacks that kind of juice and that kind of speed, the way, you know, like someone like elite returner like Sproles does. But hey, I mean, you'll sign anything you can get from special teams giving you even better starting field position, like, you'll take that. So yeah, awesome game by Covey, and certainly has earned the right to get some heat off of him.
So big picture, you look at this win, and they're 11-1. They have 5 games left. When you just look at sort of the landscape of the NFC, you have the Cowboys, who are still 2 games behind the Eagles. They will have any tiebreaker pretty much between them and the Eagles, should they wind up with the same record. You have the Vikings 1 game behind. That's essentially a 2-game lead for the Eagles again, because the Eagles beat the Vikings head up. So, I should note, of course, the Cowboys would have to beat the Eagles later this season for them to win a tiebreaker. But 5 games left, the Eagles have to lose at least 2 of them for them to relinquish the 1 seed in the NFC. So they're in a real position of dominance here. And when you look at the rest of their schedule, they have the Giants twice, they have the Bears, they have the Saints, and they have the Cowboys. And this Titans team looked like, Cowboys aside, the biggest obstacle to them in terms of surviving a game and, you know, not dropping one of these final half dozen games left on their schedule. So they put the Titans in the rearview mirror, emphatically, huge win, in my opinion, on Sunday.
I have a tease for the NFC East mixtape, so listen to that. You're going to have to now to hear my riveting thoughts on. I'm not afraid of the Cowboys at all, but there is something I'm afraid of about that matchup in that game. So
okay.
hear what that is. That is my biggest concern. More than anything the rest of the season, that one thing that I'm thinking of is the biggest concern the rest of the way. All right, now that I've teased that, last couple thoughts I wanted to say. I meant to bring this up on the offensive section. Since the week 6 bye that the Titans had, their defense was allowing just 16.2 points per game and 318.3 yards per game. Eagles more than doubled that, 35 points mm-hmm. on offense. And then for the yardage total, they had about almost like So they had 453 yards of offense.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. And they could have had more if they didn't shoot themselves in the foot so much earlier in the game with all those dumb penalties, which were like self-inflicted mistakes, not anything the Titans were doing so great. And then if they didn't pull their starters with about like in the fourth quarter. So like,
right. Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That's just adding more context to how impressive a performance it was. And then for Hurts specifically, you look up like the other top MVP candidates, what they did against the Titans defense. I mean, Josh Allen was great, but he threw for about 60 fewer yards than Jalen Hurts did. They had the same amount of total touchdowns with four each and a slightly worse passer rating, slightly worse completion percentage. So close, but Hurts edged him out. Burrow was significantly worse. Only had one touchdown, 91.0 passer rating. And Mahomes had 446 yards, but the...
He did in that game, 446? Well, how did that game go to overtime?
It went to overtime, and he threw the ball 68 freaking times because the Titans could stop the run.
That explains it.
He was not an efficient 446 yards. Right. That was more about like the volume. And then he also had one touchdown, one interception. He did have a rushing touchdown, but he had an 80.9 pass rating. Point of all that being, Hurts easily had the best performance against any of those like MVP kind of caliber quarterbacks against this Titans defense, which just, you know, puts it into perspective, makes it all that more impressive. Hurts is the first player in Eagles history to produce 300-plus passing yards, 3-plus passing touchdowns, and 1-plus rushing touchdown in a single game. Like, the only other performance that's comparable to that, and I think Vic was 17 yards shy of this benchmark, was Michael Vick in the Monday Night Massacre back in 2010. Like, that's the kind of level of dominant performance. Obviously, you know, Vic was, I would say, better in that game than Hurts was in this game. Just, he had like, what, 6 touchdowns or whatever. But it's on that level. It's like, that's that kind of impressive of a performance that we just saw from Jalen Hurts yesterday. So, yeah, every reason to feel good about the Eagles. Nothing about them. This is not fluky. This is, like, legit. The quarterback's great. The offense, so many ways they can beat you. And it's not even at full form because Goddard's not even here and he's coming back. Like, the defense is finding themselves and, you know, putting more inspiring coming off this performance, especially. There's hope for the special teams unit, apparently. They might not be a total disaster. So, every reason to think the Eagles are the best. If the Eagles aren't number one in everyone's power rankings, which are very important, but most
for sure they will be with the Chiefs loss on Sunday.
That's what I mean. Yeah, like, how can they not be? There will be people who try to outsmart themselves and put, like, I don't know, the Bills back up there. No, it's the Eagles. I think the Eagles, Bills, and Chiefs are all in the same tier still to me. I still think that's like a clear tier at the top.
The Eagles are the best team in the league.
But yeah,
the Eagles are number one in that tier. Team in the league. Yeah. Yeah. So, I will play Debbie Downer here for one quick second, though.
Why would you do that? That was such a good rant by me.
It was a good rant. I agree. But it is fair to note, Titans did have a lot of injuries. So DeNico Autry was out for this game. Harold Landry has been out for the whole year. That doesn't really, you know, fact. I mean, certainly everyone they've played hasn't had to worry about Harold Landry. Christian Fulton, their best cornerback, went down during this game. They were missing their slot corner, Elijah Molden. David Long, their very good linebacker, got hurt in this game.
Tackler. Missed
I think most of the second half, I believe, at least. They were missing Caleb Farley, who was a number one. He wasn't a starter, but a number one pick of theirs. And you mentioned earlier they were without. They were playing with backup Dennis Daly. At left tackle, but they've been playing with him all year. They lost Taylor Lewan in week 2. So, you know, the Eagles did have some advantages in being able to attack, you know, certain aspects of this Tennessee team. This Tennessee team was missing a lot of their best players. But, yeah, I mean, there's still no doubt that the Eagles performed to an extremely high level on Sunday, no doubt.
Any final thoughts, Jimmy?
Yeah. One quick thing also on the Saints, who, again, we're recording this on Monday morning. They play the Buccaneers tonight on Monday Night Football. If you play around on 538.com, or at least if you did prior to this weekend's slate of games, like I did, they were, I don't know if this is still true, but they were 8% likely to make the playoffs.
It's about their division. It's not like about them getting a wild card spot.
Right. So they're 8% to win, to make the playoffs. If they beat the Buccaneers on Monday night, that jumps up to like 25%. If they lose to the Buccaneers, it's like less than 1%. So this is a pretty big game for the Eagles, for the Saints draft pick, which of course is owned by the Eagles. Big game for Eagles fans to kind of watch and hope for the Saints' demise. It'll all but clinch the Eagles a top 18 pick in the 2023 draft, but certainly will be much higher than that if they lose this game. Right now, what are they? It's sixth, I think. And if they lose this game, it'll probably be fifth. I think it only moves up one spot on tiebreakers or whatever. But yeah, certainly that pick looks like it's going to be a big one. So yeah, that'll just serve as my final thought this week.
Yeah, it's a must lose game for the Saints. Must win game for the Bucks from the Eagles' perspective. Got to root hard for the Bucks to be able to win this game. Doesn't have to be pretty, just have to get that win and make sure they get the NFC South and the Saints do not. So agree with you there. And then final thought I had. So I have some friends, Jimmy, not football related, sorry. I have some friends who have been dealing, let's say, with a neglectful rental property management company where a lot of security issues, like serious kind of like issues that have been like repeated.
Okay.
And nothing has really been done other than like bare minimum window dressing, literally in some cases, tinting windows to prevent crime, you know, really that solves a lot. And I know they've exhausted a lot of options too in terms of trying to address this, including like contacting, like everything you would think of, like contacting the company, like trying to have a conversation, trying to be like, hey, there are big security issues here. Like this door isn't locking and everything, and really aren't getting an effective and timely response. So if anyone is out there who knows anything to do about that, because again, they've tried to exhaust a lot of different avenues to getting this resolved. And it is not easy. It seems like my understanding is there is a lot of, sadly, kind of too much maybe protection on the rental side of things and not enough to like actually ensure the safety and well-being, reasonably so, people who are paying good money for this rental property. So if anyone knows, if there's any kind of legal avenues or whatever, what to do about that and has an effective method, reach out to me. You can email me. That's brandon.gouten@sbnation.com. You can email me, and I would like to hear from you. Or DM me on Twitter or Instagram at Brandon Gouten. I would like to hear if you have any ways that, maybe my friends can kind of get some resolution and meaningful change, and they can actually, improve the things that they reasonably want improved. So there you go.
All right.
I figured it was time to address that. It's been happening for way too long. Anyway, this has been BGN Radio 293, brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. Go to righteousfelon.com. You use discount code BGN20 for 20% off your order. That's BGN20. I can't stress enough. It's going to go back down to BGN15 after the holiday season. So you want to do it now.
Stock up, baby.
In advance. It's time. It's time to go to righteousfelon.com and use discount code BGN20 for 20% off your order. You will not regret doing it. I feel very confident in saying that. If you want to buy, sell, or rent a house, you want to talk to Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors and RoachRealtors.com by going to the website or calling or texting this phone number.
856-906-9295.
You can follow me, once again, on Twitter, Instagram, at Brandon Gouten. Read my work at bleedinggreennation.com. Jimmy Kemsky, he's available at phillyvoice.com. You want to follow him on Twitter or Instagram at Jimmy Kemsky, at BGN_radio, and at Bleeding Green are the the website/podcast accounts associated with this. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. We really appreciate those. Get around to reading some of those because we're slacking, maybe. And what else? We will be back with you later in this week to preview the 11-1 Eagles going up against the Giants, who are coming off a tie against the Commanders. So we'll talk to you then.
Goodbye, everybody.
BGN.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.